We are Harvard Ventures, and this is The Bottom Line, a podcast about entrepreneurship, innovation, and everything in between. I'm Virginia, and today we have special guest Alex Kale, partner and head of Salesforce Ventures International in the Zoom studio. Mr. Kale graduated summa cum laude from Boston University and is a graduate of Harvard Business School. He's led many investments in several leading software companies, including RedKix, which was sold to Facebook, SessionM, which was sold to MasterCard, Bring, Contentful, GoCardless, Gong, Unbabel, WeFox, ZoomIn, and much more. Salesforce Ventures invests from Series A to IPO growth rounds and backs the best enterprise entrepreneurs. Let's get right into the bottom line. You graduated summa cum laude from Boston University and you have a Harvard MBA. At what point did you become interested in entrepreneurship and how did your first job shape where you are today?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think when I thought about that question, I think I was influenced a lot by my father, actually, in a big way when it comes to entrepreneurship. So he was an entrepreneur, not in kind of the venture-backed definition, but more as like a small business owner. And so I always remember, you know, him recounting stories about his decision to kind of leave a stable job and kind of go after it on his own, taking that kind of proverbial leap of faith, I suppose. And of course, some kind of 50 years later, he's never really looked back on that. So I think for me, growing up, I always kind of admired folks that were enterprising and were looking to kind of solve problems. And that's kind of shaped how I think about entrepreneurship today. I think in large ways, more than anything, entrepreneurship is a state of mind. You know, one where you kind of see opportunity that others don't and where you want to solve problems that you've identified. And so it's that kind of, I suppose, obsessive pursuit of kind of making something better through that lens, which has always attracted me in my career. And I think because of that, I've been kind of really attracted to the spirit and energy around that of entrepreneurs. And part of the reason why I started my own company as an entrepreneur was because of that and the desire to kind of make a problem that I saw better. So that's kind of, you know, I guess it's, so entrepreneurship for me has been a long running kind of theme. In terms of my first job, so I started my career working at Merrill Lynch in investment banking, you know, had studied economics at Boston University and was deeply interested in kind of capital markets and finance. And for me, I guess it shaped me in two big ways. Number one, I'd say, you know, it gave me an incredible foundation in many ways. I mean, I got to do things at 21 years old that I probably had no real right to be doing and had no experience to do. So just getting that skill set and that exposure early in my career was just super valuable. And so very thankful for that. And then I think the number two way really shaped me is also kind of figuring out what I didn't want to do. So part of the reason I left banking and kind of decided to go do an MBA and do other things is because I kind of realized that learning curve had really slowed down for me. And as I kind of thought about my career for, you know, the next 5, 10, 15 years, I didn't see myself as a career banker. And so in many ways, it was an amazing foundation and a kind of platform for what I went on to do after.
That's amazing. And so you joined Salesforce back in 2015, and you're now the partner and head of Salesforce Ventures International. What has kept you at Salesforce over these last 5 years? And what do you think most people wouldn't necessarily know about Salesforce's mission and company culture?
Yes, I'll start with the second part first, which is kind of what most people probably don't know on the outside in. And I think it's not only something that surprised me the most about Salesforce and also what's kept me here for so long, which is just how real and tangible the culture is here. You know, I think kind of before coming to Salesforce, I thought of culture as, you know, this thing that many companies talked about, and you'd walk into an office and it'd be up on a wall somewhere on a big plaque. And that was kind of what culture was all about. And people paid lip service to it, but didn't really kind of fundamentally live and breathe by that culture. And I think that's what's been so refreshing and rewarding, I'd say, at Salesforce, is that it's a real breathing, living thing and that people really live by that. You know, there's that famous Peter Drucker quote that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I could really see why here at Salesforce. I think what's incredible is, you know, when the company got started, the vision was not only to build an amazing company, but to build a different kind of company, one in which, you know, really improved the state of the world. And so I think that's incredibly inspiring, just being part of that every single day. You know, and at Salesforce, the way that manifests is we have these kind of four core values that really underpin every single thing we do, which are trust, customer success, innovation, and equality. And these are really, as I say, kind of fundamental, non-negotiable. And I just, you know, just feel like it's so important for companies to be value-led like Salesforce is. You know, I think especially as a startup, as you're thinking about building a foundation and kind of differentiating yourself and really winning in the market you're in, being value-led, I think, can be just a fundamental, huge advantage, especially as you saw, kind of what we see now with COVID and, you know, being in a period of crisis. That's the kind of period where these values really get tested. And so as an investor, you know, part of the role I play is, you know, helping CEOs along the journey in terms of doing our best to help them build really big businesses. And I think one of the things we focus on is kind of how they should really embed those values really from inception as a way of kind of thinking about not just capital, but other areas that they should be focusing on. So I think that's kind of one thing that would really surprise folks outside of Salesforce. And, you know, more personally, what's kept me here, I think three things kind of come to mind. One is, you know, this values and culture piece that we spoke about. I just think it's super important to be in an organization where you really see eye to eye with, you know, the mission of the business, the impact it's having on the world, and kind of what the company really stands for and believes. And I think that's more important today than ever before. And I think a lot of people would kind of choose companies based on that for their career. Number two is, you know, just getting to work and support the best entrepreneurs in software. I mean, it's a privileged job that I have, and day in and day out, I get to support incredible businesses and, you know, do my part in creating the world's largest kind of software ecosystem and driving digital transformation, not just for companies that we invest, but also for Salesforce customers. And so day to day, that's just incredibly rewarding. And then I think the third thing that's kept me here is just working with an amazing set of people, you know, whether it's folks on my team and the rest or the rest of the executives at Salesforce. It's just an incredible group of people that this company attracts, and it's just made it a lot of fun to be here. So I can't believe it's been 5 years. In many ways, these things just fly by. It feels like it's been just yesterday, but that's kind of what's kept me here.
Those are some great insights in your company culture. So Salesforce Ventures has invested in an incredibly impressive portfolio of startups, including Zoom, Snowflake, Stripe, and more. When you're analyzing a startup pitch, what's your formula for market validation?
So it's interesting. I mean, I think, first of all, as you say, we're incredibly fortunate to be able to partner and support so many incredible companies all over the world. Today, you know, Salesforce Ventures is one of the most active enterprise software investors. You know, we've deployed over $2.5 billion from the company's balance sheet and have supported over 400 companies. And so it's incredible to take a step back and kind of think about what makes so many of those companies successful. And I do think, you know, I don't think there's actually a single formula. You know, these things vary, I think, on a case-by-case basis. In many ways, I think the one thing that we do have, which is really unique, and it gives us a pretty interesting vantage point, is by being part of Salesforce, we just get to see the world in a slightly different way. And what I mean by that is, you know, we really can kind of figure out and understand what's happening in the enterprise and what are the needs of our customers. And so at a fundamental level, what we're looking for are companies that can really address these very large unmet needs in a really transformative way. I mean, I think if you kind of look at the most of the CEOs we've backed, one of the things they have in common is just this kind of obsessive need with delighting their customers and creating a product that's going to drive that transformation forward. So I think that's probably kind of the single biggest validation for us is, you know, companies that are really going after huge market opportunities in a big way and delighting their customers on the journey. And that's kind of paid out in terms of, you know, having a lot of success in the portfolio and a lot of exits. You know, we've been fortunate to have, I think it's over 20 IPOs at this point and close to 100 exits. And I think that's kind of been driven by that true north of what are you doing to move the industry forward? How are you supporting customers and kind of how are you going to build a really large kind of category defining company in that space?
I think a lot of students probably struggle with the fact that there's not always the right answer in startup land. So it's really interesting that you mentioned that there's not really one formula for market validation. How does your investment analysis change depending on which round the startup is looking to raise?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting you asked that, especially I guess very relevant for us because, you know, we're one of the few investors, I suppose, that kind of invest from Series A all the way to IPO. And I think the one kind of true constant for us is we really try to be kind of long-term investors. You know, building a company takes a long time. It's never kind of straight line to the top. There's always ups and downs. Most entrepreneurs, when they look back on their journey, they realize that, you know, patience and having a long-term mindset were critical to kind of the success of the business. And I think, you know, the best CEOs always try to find folks as investors that are really going to support that journey because it is a journey. You know, I always tell entrepreneurs you're kind of inviting someone to live in your living room, and you can't really kick them out for the next 10 years. So choose wisely, because it's a really important decision you make. And so I think one of the most fundamental, ways that we think about backing startups is taking that long-term view. And so whether we think a company is 1 year away from exit or 10 years away, we think of ourselves as very patient because we get to invest from the company's balance sheet. And so that's kind of one thing that never changes. I think from a financial perspective, obviously the more early stage a company is, the less data there is to analyze, right? If you're thinking about a company that's kind of at the Series A, oftentimes might have only a handful of customers, if that, depending on kind of how far along they are. And so you compare that with a business that has 50 million of revenue, 100 million of revenue. At the later stages, you just have a lot more data and metrics. And so there's some things that we always look for, whether that's the kind of strategic tie into Salesforce, the kind of cultural impact, the values of the founder, the large market opportunity, the differentiation, the kind of disruptiveness of the technology, the team behind it. Those are things that no matter what investment stage we're looking at, are always going to be important for us. But then in terms of, the farther along you are, the more we can kind of dig into the numbers and be much more kind of metrics driven. And, the beauty about software companies and SaaS is it's such a predictable business model that you can kind of really understand the company's customer acquisition and kind of route to market and what's working, what's not working well. And so as the company scales and gets bigger and kind of prepares for an IPO, we're really looking at it from the lens of, how efficient have they been over time? How well is that machine working from a go-to-market perspective? And do they have what it takes to kind of be the market leader in their space? So it's a lot of fun, getting to kind of straddle both sides of that. Some of our companies when we invest have 15 people, and some of the companies that we invest have 1,000 people. And so those are very different, to your point, just very different viewpoints. And we're, fortunate to be able to do both.
That's really helpful to know. So for anyone who's looking to raise money from Salesforce Ventures, regardless of what stage you're in, know that Salesforce Ventures will be looking at your financials and have a clear understanding of how that all works. So venture partners often compete with each other to close investments on hot startups. What differentiates Salesforce Ventures from other VC firms, and what's your pitch to a hot startup who might have an offer to take an investment from Salesforce?
So I think this is a great question, and this is something that we think about a lot. I mean, venture capital as an asset class is super interesting because the entrepreneur, the CEO is the customer, if you will, in many ways, as the recipient of the funding. And so unlike, if you're working in public markets, you might have a great investment thesis and a great idea, and you can just go and execute against that without ever even meeting the management team. Obviously, in venture, it's completely different. And it's a two-way street in a real way. I mean, the entrepreneur is choosing the VC fund just as much as the VC fund is choosing the entrepreneur. And so I think, going back to my earlier point about this being a long-term partnership, the way we think about it is, first of all, different investors can add value in very different ways. And so Salesforce as a strategic investor just brings a very different viewpoint on how we can be involved in the company's success in a way that actually I think is very complementary to other funds. And so oftentimes, you're right, a lot of financial funds will compete for the same deals and try to kind of convince entrepreneurs to work with them. I think what's interesting about us is we can work alongside a lot of those same firms and partner from a kind of Salesforce perspective. And so for me, that typically has three kind of key components of where we've seen our CEOs really get leverage and get the success they need to grow their business. Number one is obviously Salesforce is an amazing customer base and the largest kind of cloud ecosystem in the world. So as an early stage founder, when you're trying to, get your go-to-market up and running and, you really want a partner that can give you access to customers, we're very unique in that way. And so as an example, we set up these innovation days between the startups we invest in and some of the customers we have to kind of connect the dots between great products and some of the innovation happening in our ecosystem. So just by virtue of that, we're very different. I think number two is kind of our know-how. If you take a step back, in many ways, Salesforce is seen as like the gold standard when it comes to software, kind of define the whole shift to the cloud. And, most entrepreneurs that are aspiring to build a software company kind of look up to Salesforce in many ways, just given all the success of the business and kind of the impact it's had on the world and in business. And so our goal through Salesforce Ventures is really to share those lessons as much as possible with the CEOs that we back. We want to kind of shortcut their mistakes, if you will, and give them as much of that you know, Salesforce playbook and kind of secret sauce as we can. And so we really work hard to, whether it's giving them access to our executive team, give them insights on kind of how we do recruiting or how we do pricing or our communication strategy. We're really working hand in hand with the entrepreneurs to figure out kind of what are the gaps that they're looking to address in their business, and how can we kind of share some of the lessons that Salesforce has developed over the last 20 years. And that's a super big accelerant, right? As an early stage founder, time is never your friend. You're trying to go as fast as possible and break as many walls to kind of grow and develop your product into something big. And so to the extent that you have a partner next to you that can really understand some of those challenges and help you learn, you know, is something we hear a lot of good feedback for. And then lastly, I think just the Salesforce brand and credibility are super unique. You know, specifically given, you know, all we do is invest in enterprise. What we hear a lot from our CEOs is that, you know, customers that they sell to, kind of when they hear Salesforce is an investor, that puts the startup in a different league. And as an early stage founder, I mean, I remember whether it's, you know, trying to get your first customers, hire someone, even pitch the media, you just want as much credibility boost as possible. You know, most startups, especially in the early days, are really trying to punch above their weight and kind of break in. And so for us, our goal is to help accelerate and make those companies successful by giving them access to our brand and leveraging the credibility that Salesforce brings, which is why we're so excited with some of the companies that, you know, have gone on to become such big businesses. So that's kind of how we think about it. And I think you're right that the entrepreneur really should kind of ask these questions in terms of what can you bring to the table as an investor? How are you different? How does your fund model operate? Because it makes a huge difference in the relationship over the kind of course of building the company.
Hi, Alex. Thanks so much again for joining us. I'm Georgia, and I love what you said about the ethos of Salesforce. And we know this brand credibility is also a global power. So in May of 2019, Salesforce Ventures launched a $125 million Europe Trailblazer Fund. How does the European and American startup landscape compare? Why has there been more overall liquidity in Europe?
So another great question. You know, for kind of taking a step back just to kind of provide some personal context and some of the lens that I kind of look through to answer this question. So I've been in London on and off now for kind of better part of the last 10 years. And so I have a pretty unique vantage point. I mean, I was investing prior to coming to London, was investing mostly in the U.S. Into companies in kind of the Bay Area. And so have been able to see both ecosystems. And I think it's absolutely incredible to see what's happening in Europe over the last kind of 5 to 10 years, especially in software. I, you know, I think the biggest thing that's happened is that opportunity for startups has really become a global phenomenon where it's no longer centralized in one or two hubs in the world. And so what you see in Europe is you have an incredible group of smart people scattered across, you know, many different countries with amazing universities, amazing research institutions, and a lot of that kind of entrepreneurial DNA going across, you know, not just in San Francisco and in the Valley, but everywhere else. And so I think for me, what's been so interesting is seeing some of that flywheel come into play. At the end of the day, what you need in an ecosystem is you need access to capital, you need great talent, and you need a lot of kind of success stories that create that flywheel. And I think we're finally starting to see that in Europe in a way that we hadn't before. And so if you look at a lot of our success in our portfolio, some of these companies, you know, you can no longer distinguish between are they a European company or are they a US-based company. You know, the kinds of entrepreneurs that we look to back really have global aspirations and want to be number one in what they're doing everywhere, not just in their home market. And so what we've seen is that there's some really amazing advantages to starting a company out of Europe. You know, typically the cost of hiring folks is lower. So, you know, when you're raising funding, it lasts for longer. And then you have a lot more, I'd say, loyalty in terms of the people you hire. I mean, it's a lot more common in European startups to see people stay on for a much longer period of time. And so for us, it's just been incredible to be part of that momentum, you know, given some of the success we've seen. And I think it's only going to kind of continue to accelerate. You know, to your point, there is starting to be more liquidity in Europe now than ever before. It still trails with, you know, the levels in the US, but it's starting to catch up. All of a sudden, you're seeing kind of $5, $10, $15 billion companies get born out of Europe. And that's something we just didn't have before. And so not only does that create kind of grease the VC flywheels in terms of creating a lot of liquidity for the initial funds that invested, it also breeds the next generation of talent. You know, in these companies that are becoming kind of, let's say, $10 billion businesses, all of a sudden, you know, the whole kind of next level of management will oftentimes spin out and either go join earlier stage companies or become entrepreneurs themselves. And so we, for the first time, we have this incredible flywheel in place in Europe. And actually, in many ways, you're seeing more and more U.S. investors try to kind of go after that and invest here. So it's been a super exciting run for us. And I've really enjoyed being on this side of the pond, kind of seeing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you recently also spoke with CNBC about how COVID is encouraging Silicon Valley tech investors to have a more global approach to their investment strategy. What other changes do you hypothesize COVID will make for the venture capital and startups ecosystem worldwide?
For sure. I mean, I think in many ways, you know, the way I think about COVID, I mean, obviously it's been an incredibly stressful and difficult time for many different people in all sorts of industries. And so that certainly doesn't go away. And, you know, hopefully we're kind of nearing getting to a vaccine and kind of turning that corner. But in the meantime, what we've seen is in many ways, the kind of the race to cloud adoption and digital is faster now than ever before. You know, as many of us are kind of cooped up at home, working from home, digital has become for many companies kind of the only window to the world as like the real storefront. And so I think actually what COVID has done has really accelerated a lot of trends that existed before, but just brought them forward in a big way. So if you take, for example, remote working, you know, it's not that no one was working remotely before COVID, but it was kind of not equally distributed. And it was only a small subset of the kind of tech industry that was doing that. Fast forward today, and a much larger percentage of folks are doing that. So I think in many ways, we're seeing a kind of once in a generation paradigm shift that will play out for many years to come. And in addition to, you know, capital being a lot more distributed across countries, it's kind of really leveled the playing field, I think, for a lot of European and kind of companies outside the U.S. And actually, even within the U.S., if you're building a company, you know, outside of kind of the key clusters of Boston, New York, or San Francisco, you know, being on a Zoom call has really leveled that playing field. So I think it's super kind of exciting to see all the innovation that's happening. And in many ways, you know, I can't imagine having COVID in a period without the internet, because it would have been much harder to, you know, if this had happened 30, 40 years ago, to kind of cope. And so that's been, you know, in many ways, a super exciting accelerant from the last few months.
That makes a lot of sense. And we know, as you said before, that Salesforce is a value-led organization. Another trend we've seen accelerated due to COVID is an emphasis put on diversity, inclusion, belonging in the workforce and in life. Salesforce Ventures has now partnered with Black VC, Operator Collective, and Berkeley Haas School of Business, introducing the Black Venture Institute. Could you tell us more about Salesforce Ventures' commitment to Black and other underrepresented entrepreneurs, and how do you see this fitting into the overall company strategy?
So to me, this is a super important point, and it's, again, it's one of the things that makes me so proud to be at Salesforce, to be part of this team. I mean, I think you know, I mentioned earlier how Salesforce is such a values-led organization, and equality has always been a core value here. And so as we kind of think about how do we integrate our values into our broader business objectives, and kind of how do we provide that commitment to social responsibility into our investment and operating processes, this initiative really stood out. You know, one of the statistics that I just find absolutely, you know, shocking and surprising is only 1% of venture-backed startups have a Black founder, and fewer than 3% of VC investors are Black. And so from an equality perspective, that just doesn't add up. And so what we've done as an example is we've committed to investing $100 million of intentional capital through Salesforce Ventures to really empower companies that are led by Black and underrepresented minority founders. And so to me, it's an example of kind of putting money where our mouth is, and really kind of building out this goal of having a much more diverse ecosystem, and, you know, collectively increasing our overall representation here. And so what we're doing internally is modifying our processes to build accountability, whether it's at the screening phase, diligence phase, or even our hiring phase, because those are all just efforts that we can all do to do better here. So it's something that, again, just makes me very proud to be at Salesforce. There's a lot more to come here, and we're really excited by some of the leadership that the team is taking on this.
Thank you for sharing. And this is something that's also really important to us here at Harvard Ventures. So we appreciate the commitment you and your organization is making to Black and other underrepresented entrepreneurs. Now, to close out this interview, we like to ask all our guests, what is your hottest take?
So my hot take would be, you know, fundamentally that the Valley's moment has kind of gone and that it's over now. And that what we're seeing is kind of the rise of the rest of the world. I think that's kind of, you know, if you take a step back and you kind of think about what we just talked about a little bit about where opportunities are being emerging from and kind of seeing a world where physical location starts to matter a lot less, given that we're all much more connected than we ever have been. I think, you know, in many ways, kind of the Valley introduced us all to the incredible ecosystem in tech since the 50s. And I would say it's kind of peak days are over. If I look at the next 50 years of innovation, I think we're going to see a ton more of that come from places that we wouldn't expect ordinarily, whether that's Europe, Asia, Latin America, really, everywhere else. And I think physical geography just takes a step back and kind of levels that playing field. So, you know, I think the next 20 years will look very, very different to the last 20 years. And so excited to be a part of that.
And that's the bottom line. If you'd like to get in touch with us, definitely follow us on Instagram at Harvard_Ventures. Stay tuned next week for another episode of The Bottom Line.